Good evening, everyone. So the instructions continue. It's not completely directly logical, straight line, but it's all very helpful as he proceeds. After telling us not to throw things around carelessly, always a good idea, he said, after the work is done, it's time to prepare for the following day's noon meal. So then you check to see if there are any little rocks in the rice or any kind of bugs or anything, because in those days there was. And in my day there used to be. You always had to check the rice and find those little bits of gravel that didn't get cleaned out. And you never got all of them. When choosing the rice and vegetables to be used, those working under the tenzo should offer sutras to the spirit of the stove. Actually, pray to the stove. Calls it a kamado. And you can buy a kamado these days for barbecue or for roasting. Somebody gave me one many years ago who sent it from Japan. It's a big round ceramic thing. And you can roast in it. You can do anything that you do in an outdoor cooker. And that's what they used way back then. Still using it today. But usually there's no prayer to go into it, no sutras to be spoken to the stove anymore. Then prepare the ingredients for side dishes and soup, cleaning everything thoroughly of any dirt or insects. Forget what a big deal that used to be. You never could buy corn that didn't have worms in it. They all did. They didn't have things to make the worms go away. When the tenzo receives the food from the kuzu, from the head guy, he must never complain about its quality or quantity, but always handle everything with the greatest care and attention. Nothing could be worse than to complain about too much or too little of something or of inferior quality. All, both day and night, allow all things to come into and reside within your mind. Allow your mind and all things to function together as a whole. Before midnight, direct your attention to organizing the following day's work, and after midnight, begin preparations for the morning meal. Hard to know when they sleep. There's a footnote. Uchiyama Roshi's modern translation says, both day and night, everything we encounter is our life. Because of that, we put our life into everything we encounter. Our life and what is being encountered become one. We exhaust our life force so that our life and encounter might function as they should. We exhaust our life. So we keep trying to get not tired. We keep thinking it's bad to get exhausted. But the tenzo is being encouraged to put everything into it. withhold nothing. After the morning meal, wash the pots and cook the rice and soup for the noon meal. When soaking the rice and measuring the water, the tenzo should be present at the sink. Keep your eyes open. Don't allow even one grain of rice to be lost. See the pot as your own head. See the water as your lifeblood. That's about as intimate as you can get. Be thoroughly, thoroughly intimate with what you're using, so-called, and being used by at the same time. So he says the tenzo, even if he's not doing all the work, because it's a large monastery, should be overseeing everything that the assistants are doing and never look away. Never forget that they're assistants and they're working under him. So to maintain the authority of the position. That happens in a working situation sometimes, that the assistants begin to sort of take off on their own, and it's hard to keep that authority distinct and make sure that somebody is in control. Not exactly in charge as much as in control of what's happening. When you prepare food, never view the ingredients for some commonly held perspective, nor think about them only with your emotions. Maintain an attitude that tries to build great temples from ordinary greens, that expounds the Buddha Dharma through the most trivial activity. When making a soup with ordinary greens, do not be carried away by feelings of dislike towards them, nor regard them lightly. Neither jump for joy simply because you've been given ingredients of superior quality to make a special dish. By the same token that you do not indulge in a meal because of its particularly good taste, there's no reason to feel an aversion toward an ordinary one. Your attitude towards things should not be contingent upon their quality. A person who is influenced by the quality of a thing, or who changes his speech or manner according to the appearance or position of the people he meets, is not a man working in the way. So that's, in the same paragraph, a big switch from talking about whether you like the kale or not, to how to be with people. The quality of a thing. Changing speech or manner according to the appearance or position of the people she meets. And cooking in the same way. We're all such social animals, and we're acting all the time, and reacting all the time. So it's very hard to be the same person with everybody. Very hard not to be awed by sitting down with the president, or meeting the Queen of England, or even meeting a small child as a real ordinary person. strengthen your resolve and devote your life spirit to surpassing the refinement of the ancient patriarchs and being even more meticulous than those who came before you. That's a parent's wish always, that their children succeed beyond them, get it better, make it better. And as a parent, one tries as hard as possible to succeed in order to create a situation where that can happen. It's how life goes on in the most ordinary way. He said, if great teachers in the past were able to make a plain soup from greens for only a pittance, we must try to make a fine soup for the same amount. This is a very difficult thing to do. Even hoping to stand alongside teachers of former times is no simple matter. Yet being scrupulous in our actions and pouring our energy into those actions, there's no reason why we cannot equal the ancient masters. And of course, he's really talking about the ancient Zen masters of the teaching of the Dharma. He's talking about Shakyamuni Buddha. He's talking about Bodhidharma, the sixth patriarch. We must aspire to the highest of ideals without becoming arrogant in our manner. That's hard too. Start getting full of aspiration and the nose goes up. Man, I'm really trying hard. Must look good. These things are truly just a matter of course. This is what we always do, of course. We know all of this, right? Yet we remain unclear about them because our minds go racing about like horses running wild in the fields, while our emotions remain unmanageable like monkeys swinging in the trees. If only we would step back to carefully reflect on the horse and the monkey, our lives would naturally become one with our work. Doing so is the means whereby we turn things, even while simultaneously we are being turned by them. It is vital that we clarify and harmonize our lives with our work and not lose sight of either the absolute or the practical. So this turning is something that shows up in different places, that in Huineng's work it talks about the Lotus Sutra turning somebody being so obsessed with the Lotus Sutra that it was turning his life and owning him. And the advice was that you could actually turn the Lotus Sutra and make it go the other way. And this is true of what he's saying, is that the Dharma turns the self and the self turns the Dharma. That the stuff we work with is creating the situation, but we're creating the situation with the stuff we work with. It's a completely mutual situation, and it's moving all the time. It's turning and moving. And our job is to move along with it, to keep the dance moving as we meet each thing that we work with. And then one of the most famous things that he says in here is this: handle even a single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation in a most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living things. Handle even a single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. And of course, Thich Nhat Hanh teaches in this sense. He's always allowing us to notice how things are made. It's not just a leaf of a spinach leaf or a leaf of kale. It's I don't know what the word is. It's an amalgamation of many, many things. It's the rain and the sun, and it's the dirt, and it's the bugs in the dirt, and it's the worms, and it's all the minerals and the everything that goes into making this one leaf. And the making of it was so complex. If you look at the inside of a leaf, you see a very complicated system where it's sucking up water and sending out oxygen and bringing in CO2 and working this whole system back and forth. So leaves are actually allowing us to breathe. They're actually a life force just as we are. So it sounds a little much to say, looking at it as a Buddha, but when you think about it and really feel for it, you can begin to see, and only begin, because it's infinite, the many things that go into making a leaf. It's affected by Mercury and Uranus and Pluto. It's affected by anything you can think of went into the making of each leaf. So that's a good place to stop, so I will. But there's time for discussion and questions.
So the power that you cannot grasp with your rational mind is how everything is Buddha. Mm-hmm. We come in contact with this and eat and read and whatever.
Same.
Is the Buddha. And that's the power that functions in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Or just seeing that as power. seeing that.
Yes.
It's the mystery.
Yes.
I guess I'm having trouble with that word power. What the translator was conveying, whether it's talking about energy or...
Well, probably energy is a good way of thinking about it. More than that, I would say. We don't really know what the power is. I mean, behind the energetics, there's something else, and nobody knows what that is. The physicists don't know what that is. They see that things are happening, and they're sussing out how the happenings are happening, and they're finding it's much more organic, even in what used to be called mechanical, isn't mechanical at all on a minuscule level. And even on a larger level, a lot of what they used to think was mechanical isn't. It's much more organic. But they don't really know what's driving the organicness of the whole. Or even if it has a point. I was just reading about a physicist who says it's an incredible situation and we can never get to the bottom of it. It's so complicated. Even though he found two synergies of energies, but there are two more that he can't make fit. I don't forgotten which they are, but he said, even then, he said, "Look, it doesn't even look like it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't even maybe have any meaning. It's just happening in this amazing way, and here we are." Pinch yourself.
Yeah, you didn't go quite far enough on the leaf, because photosynthesis takes place. It's organic. It's dependent on the sun.
Yes.
And the sun has been constant for the past half a billion years.
True.
If it were a cloudy day, you'd get a different leaf.
Yes.
If it was a nice, warm, sunny day, you'd get a different leaf.
Yes.
So, and of course, the sun is dependent on the whole galaxy.
Yes.
And we can just continue on. Each leaf, if you want to go there, is a manifestation of the entire universe.
Yes.
As we are, of course.
Yes.
Since there's no distinction.
Exactly. That's what Wendy was saying.
Which reminds me of the story. These two monks on pilgrimage walked up, it's in Japan, I believe, walked up to this monastery, and they're going, "I wonder what we'll find here. I wonder if they're serious about Buddhism." There's a creek near the monastery, and a lettuce leaf was floating down the creek. And the two of them looked at it and goes, "I don't know." But just then, the Tenzo came running out with a net, picked it up, and ran back in. And he said, "Oh, we'll be okay."
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
That's a perfect story, Paul.
I don't remember where I read it. That's
great. Samia?
If you can talk a little bit more about the part where you're not supposed to, if I understand it right, get really excited about, like, the cauliflower. I remember once Brother David in one of the workshops encouraging us to, and again, that's my own understanding, it's like, wow, you know, get into it, be excited about it, and hear we're saying, don't get too excited about it, don't get carried away. Does it get diluted?
I think the difference is that in a monastery you have to accept and receive whatever comes in. Mm-hmm. And so from the very get-go, it's best to simply make do with what you've got and not make any kind of extra fuss about it, because then you begin to cultivate all kinds of ideas and social connections and, you know, trying to, I don't know, pay the guy who has the good cauliflower and all of that. It can get very, very complicated. But on a more basic level, I think it's just the way to live, as not to get overexcited about anything that we do. That what David is talking about is gratitude. And maybe he's talking about the pleasure that we derive from a really wonderful cauliflower, which allows us to really see it and to experience it, which otherwise we might not. And that's the same principle that Dogen is talking about, to be aware of the leaf, aware of what it is, and appreciate it. But Dogen would say, not get carried away. Kind of even mind, I think, he's recommending. But I don't think he's recommending a dead mind. You know, if you're seeing Buddha in a leaf, that means you're pretty excited. You must be. I think it's just maybe a semantic difference. I think David was talking about the same thing. In a wonderful way. I think Jennifer was first. Sorry.
Well, I got the feeling from the text that we should be as excited about the sad cauliflower, mm-hmm. the sad wilted-looking cauliflower, as the
well-developed
cauliflower. Perfectly ripe cauliflower, I remember that. I felt like it didn't matter how far along in the ripening process it was, that you should always be excited about.
You're right.
Always appreciate it.
You're right, exactly. And what I pointed out, I think last week, was that Suzuki Roshi, when he shopped for things for produce, always chose the bruised fruit and the soggy cauliflower. He felt sorry for it and thought he should take it home and cook it before it got thrown away. So that's one way, but you're right, that's exactly what he was saying. Yeah. Thank you. Jeffrey?
What I was simply going to add to this conversation, that in reading Uchiyama, I read the words, do things with an ardent mind as you embrace everything in your life. Mm-hmm. So that's not a dead mind.
Not at all. Not at all. Yes. Ardent is a wonderful word.
Yes, and he uses it in several
yes.
occasions.
I like the translation of the Satipatthana Sutra when it uses ardent. I don't think it's used very much in the new translations, but I favor it because it's not too much, but on the other hand, it's plenty of connection that you make that keeps it alive and vital and real. Yeah. Bree?
I found that, you know, the referencing to how you relate to different qualities of vegetables, interesting, and how that was right beside, you know, how we relate to different people, mm-hmm. you know, and certainly like living in a residential kind of environment, and as you put it, you know, it's like being married to 10 people. I think you said that once, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like being married to 10 people, it really is. And so, you know, over time, you know, there are definitely some individuals that, you know, are more challenging for me, you know, and some individuals that are less challenging,
yes.
You know? And so, I guess it feels like the practice becomes open to them as they arise, and sort of watching my own reactivity and watching the way that I might feel, you know, the kind of like pushing away energy versus the pulling towards energy, and then trying to find in between that to just, you know, not resisting
mm-hmm.
people arising as they are.
But you don't have to like everybody.
Oh, I sure don't. I mean,
not possible.
Well, it's very difficult.
It is very difficult.
You know, I mean, I'm not technically living there now and still spending a lot of time there, but, you know, some stuff that's there is difficult to understand.
Human relations are very difficult, just all by themselves. And I think it's a lifetime proposition just to get through the day
mm-hmm.
and deal with what comes up and find ways of not being overreactive, because that doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can see each other as some aspect that we don't understand, maybe, and that we don't like, but it's part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a mud puddle or an ugly beetle or, you know, all kinds of yucky things that happen that we don't like very much, but it's part of Buddha too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it all keeps arising. And it's helpful, I think, in the human realm to actually treat people, actually in all realms, to treat people as Buddha. And not necessarily in a very gentle way, but in a straightforward way. Sort of the way Buddha did with Angulimala. You know, he just confronted him and said, stop.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a Buddha way too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just being a doormat. You need to be very, very strong and assertive in order to truly be honest and authentic to people. And it's harder for women than it is for men, from my view. It certainly seems to be true, but it's hard for men too. So it's what we get to do. I know. You're not living there anymore, so it's easier, isn't it?
Yeah. I know, but I'm in this cabin in the middle of nowhere, and of course, like, you know, all the horror movies are always set in the cabin with a woman alone in the middle of nowhere, so.
You need a dog.
I need a dog. I don't sleep like a cabin, so by default.
That's smart.
I do need a dog. Does anyone have one? I can go up and
I have an elderly one who's like 7. He a sweetheart. But he's really good at barking.
Perfect, I'll take him.
He looks like Clifford the Cobbler.
Thank you.
We are looking for a home for him, actually, though. So, like, if you honestly want him. I'm not kidding.
I'd like to borrow him.
Well, it's 8 o'clock. Thank you all. Are there announcements?
Yes. We need someone to open next Tuesday night.
Let me check my schedule.
No, Doron, when Doron doesn't open.
Okay.
Not if you can help.
I could open. I can't stay. I have a board meeting, but I can open. And then if there's nobody who can open, I can open.
I have to check my schedule and then I'll know. Is it a rule?
Okay. Well, I'll contact Jennifer. Or maybe Karen will be back by then.
Well, why don't you just let me just open and you don't have to really worry about anything else. Mm-hmm. I'll just open it up.
Well, I know that's a lot of back and forth.
No, I just my meeting is downtown.
I can do it. I'll be out by 4 p.m., so I can do it.
Okay.
Great.
Great.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you both.
And I don't know if everybody heard that we're having a business meeting at 8:15 on the 29th, the last Tuesday of the month. Short, not longer than an hour business meeting.
Okay, 1 minute to sit.